Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Aetherius Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the barriers between religion, science, metaphysics, philosophy, and mysticism, all of which are really only aspects of the self-same quest for truth. Please note this is an independent program not produced or fact-checked by the Aetherius Society. Today, our guest is Daniel Ingram. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. Great to be here.
It's great
to have you.
Yeah, we're very excited because, you know, we're always saying to ourselves that, if there was one hospital which combined all the different, the streams of medicine, if it was really about curing the person, you'd have one place to bring it all together. And you're working towards that vision. No, you're bringing the psychic phenomenon, the into mainstream medicine. So how did you get started doing that?
Well, I started having weird experiences as a kid. So that was the first thing. I'd had these a bunch of odd experiences myself. I could go into a long list, but, there were what I call the three Daniels. So if you've seen my previous podcast, you'll have heard this one, but Daniel number one is this kid who could get into blissful, peaceful experiences around ages 3 and 4, and then lost that ability for unknown reasons. And then started having lucid flying dreams at age 5. Very cool. Big fan. Started trying to have more of those around when I was a teenager, visualizing flying before going to sleep. And that was enough meditative whatever to get me into my first massive Kundalini opening and my first OBE, which was the classic, you know, lift out, look down, see yourself there, float through the wall, freak out, snap back, buzz, and what the heck. And then I, you know, had bizarre, energetic, and other odd experiences that happened for about 10 years. And then I finally ran into people who had done tons of intensive meditation practice and really were familiar with maps and techniques to cultivate and make some sense of this kind of stuff. And then I was off and running and became totally obsessed with figuring out how to do and explore the territory mentioned in old books like those up there, which were old meditation manuals from somewhere between 1500 and 2300 years ago. So that became my obsession. So that's Daniel number one. Daniel number two was super muggly. And like really totally compartmentalized Daniel one for most of that and was like school science and math and pre-med and electrical engineering and public health school with epidemiology and a lot of biostatistics and then medical school and then emergency medicine and eventually healthcare administration, managed to retire 5 years ago. And as I've said before, Daniel number two was taught that Daniel number one either didn't exist and or was crazy and needed meds. And Daniel number one was like, hey, all of you could really benefit from exploring this technology because while it can be weird and destabilizing, confusing, and sometimes disruptive to my life, it also lent itself to a lot of healing and learning a lot of really useful internal and then eventually external skills that made the world a whole lot better. And then 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, Dr. Julieta Galante, who was an MD PhD at Cambridge University there on your fine island, said, hey, it is the height of ridiculousness that I can't talk about my most profoundly transformative experiences. And with double doctoral degrees and a public health degree in the Department of Psychiatry at Cambridge University, you would think that would be a place you could talk about important stuff like that. Yeah, no, not so much. So she said, how about you spend the summer here and try to be the change we want to see in the world? And I said, okay, yeah, it would be great if we could incorporate these things in the clinical mainstream. My colleagues in medicine did not go into these things to be ignorant and harmful, but most of the time they unfortunately are when it comes to the deep end of human experience and the wide range of things that can occur there and often do, curiously enough. And so I started this project and Daniel One had accumulated this really wild and interesting friend circle being into meditation and founding an online community and writing a book and, you know, all that stuff. And then people were like, what are you doing with your summer, Daniel? And I was like, oh, I'm doing this project with Julieta. And they're like, where do we sign? And they also happen to be like neuroscientists and psychiatrists and public health people and epidemiologists and lawyers and MBAs and venture capitalists and this amazing, and you know, all of them experiencers of some of this territory. And before we knew it, we were the Emergent Phenomenology Research Consortium. Before I knew it, I was the guy who was coming out of retirement as a volunteer because like everybody else had like lives and jobs and kids. And I had like time and resources and admin experience and could build websites. And so before I knew it, I found myself sort of the de facto administrator of this now over 230-person international research consortium dedicated to upgrading the relationship between the clinical and scientific mainstream and the deep end of human experience, trying to bring these two together. And that's what I call Daniel 3. So Daniel 3 is like trying to figure out how these two worlds can get along a whole lot better and how we can live vastly less compartmentalized lives when it comes to this stuff, and how my colleagues in medicine and science can have a vastly better understanding of this strange adventure that I found myself in.
And that's who we're speaking to now, is it?
Sorry?
We're speaking to Daniel 3 now, are we?
Yeah, kind of Daniel 3. I could bring out whichever ones you need. They're all kind of, and they're getting along better. It's the farther I go on this project, the more the thing sort of integrates. So that's nice.
That's great to be you're the microcosm of the macrocosm.
Right. Are you? Yeah. I'm sure you all have these kinds of experiences in your own lives, right? I'm just telling a teeny little particle of a much broader thing where, you know, there are books like the Galileo Commission put out this book of spiritual awakenings of all these scientists and people who thought this stuff was ridiculous and then had, wah, nope. And they found themselves in it. So, and you must have your own stories, something like this in some way. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's just, we're all managing, you know, you go to be a different person with your family and different person with your friends. And it's hard to be consistent, but I guess that's the goal. Maybe. Bring in Deborah here. She always has a great, lovely comment at these points in time.
Yeah, I'd read, and I think this might be old hat now, because there's certainly, what I read was there wasn't 230 in your network, and that's good. When I was reading it, a lot of people wanted to stay behind a mask because they were frightened of, this is Deborah words, but of trolls and people being hateful and
career suicide.
So how is that still about you? You're nodding. So that is still something that's ongoing to bring people comfortably into the bridging the gap. If you want, which is so vital. So the higher selves in my speak understand it totally, and the materialistic I've got to put dinner on the table is resisting it big style.
Yeah. So less than a third of our members are on the website, for example. You know, so the vast majority choose to be. So you can be public or private. It's all one to us. We understand, and the majority are private. So they exist in the database and we know about them and they show up for meetings sometimes and do work with us. But yeah, they don't feel comfortable enough. And a lot of these are like, you know, postdocs and people in getting PhDs or their junior faculty or, you know, junior attendings, or even sometimes people who have all kinds of experience. You know, they might be senior professors or even some emeritus, and yet they still don't feel they're yet in a place where they're comfortable being out of the closet. So from a sort of a civil rights, social justice point of view, we're like 50 years behind a lot of other fields, right? And it's strange that these experiences that have shaped in generally positive ways, though some negative ones as well, so much of human history are like, you know, and the basis of most of the world's religions, and have been demonstrated in all kinds of interesting scientific experiments for decades by the likes of, you know, the Charles Tarts and Rupert Sheldrakes and other people of the world, Dops and all of them, Ed Kelly, et cetera. And, you know, all of the people who've been researching this stuff, really going back to, you know, the old societies in the UK that were interested in seances and those things. So, yeah, it is very strange that in this modern era, this would be more taboo than, say, there are people who are willing to say, oh, I did a psychedelic, but they wouldn't talk about their other anomalous psi experiences, for example. So I think we're still far behind the curve when it comes to actual the ability of people to be out without risking, you know, not getting tenure or not getting promoted or even being fired or labeled as crazy. It's still challenging times in that regard.
Yeah, I was saying, thank you for that. I was speaking to Jack just before you came into the room with us. And I was saying that the Aetherius Society is so open on both sides of everything, really. Like, we've got a practical approach and we roll up our sleeves and we do what needs to be done practically, and yet we understand that we've got this other spiritual side, and our bodies are our robots, receiver and transceiver sets that have just got all bent out of shape. So we know that we can put them back into shape, and we understand that we've got several bodies, you know, and it was not just this physical thing we see. We totally get that. And I said to Jack, because we're all about service as well. I mean, that literally is karma yoga. Serve your fellow man, do the best you can, carry on doing the best you can, and develop yourself at the same time. So we've got that bridge. So how can an organization like us, with vast resources of information from evolved beings, how can we help you with your enormous challenge? I do believe that with discussion and finding a way, and these things have always got to be a little bit like a water ingress. You have to go where you can. But in my gut, my intuition, whatever you want to call it, says that there is a place for us to help you, and we've just got to find it. So to have you in the room here and sort of tuning into you and your energy is just so wonderful that, yeah, I sincerely believe that we can help you in what you're trying to do this is what we got, do you want it? No, but this is what you got, do you want it? So after this, I'd like to keep the dialogue going. I should certainly follow you, and I'd like to be included in anything that you feel that I could be included in whatever way you feel appropriate, because there will be a way. I know that there will be a way for us to integrate what we have, because we're all one, aren't we? It's just one big thing doing all different things. And yeah, feel really strongly about that. So I'll just leave it there before it becomes like too much talking. Then I'll let Jack step back in again. But keep that idea going. And it's like from my heart, we will find a way to help. It's too important not to help.
Thank you. I super appreciate not only the specific offer, but the sentiment behind it and the feeling behind it. So that's really kind of you. Thank you. And luckily there are, the plan is big. Obviously there's a lot of steps you need to go through in order to globally integrate these kinds of things in a skillful, linguistically acceptable, conceptually acceptable, adds value to care, and you can demonstrate that way. There are a lot of steps you need to do, but luckily the nice thing about lots of steps is also people with lots of skill sets and talents can also step in and help in various ways. This is also a many decades long project. We're not naive to the amount of inertia of the system. This will require generational change. But like MAPS did for psychedelics and MDMA, we're digging in for that sort of very long game. So yes, we could talk about all the specific parts of the project where someone might help. And I'm happy to have that conversation. Jack, you had some thoughts.
Well, I was just wondering what success will look like. I was looking at the page on your website, and that sounds like a key thing to talk about as well. But whatever you want to say, I mean, this is it's your platform to tell as many people as possible. So
thank you. So I spent a lot of time looking at 140 years of people attempting to do this, and from our point of view, failing. And what failing, not that they didn't do all kinds of great work, but failing from our point of view is failure to integrate into the textbooks of psychiatry and emergency medicine and neurology, to get diagnostic codes, to get reimbursement, to get, you know, incorporated into National Health Service guidelines and policy and all of those things. And people have been trying for 140 years since the cosmic consciousness kids of the 1880s and 90s, and then on through William James and the relaxation response people and Esalen and transpersonal various waves, and, you know, modern attempts as well. So, and lots of other organizations that come from specific traditions such as your own. And so we got to learn a lot, because we have a lot of data of like previous attempts and what they tried and what didn't work. So that's useful to iterate on. And then we're trying a very, very sort of real politic approach that involves, like, can you demonstrate to the MBAs that are the gatekeepers of the system that you can add value to care, that you can reduce costs, that you can improve wellness and outcomes, patient satisfaction scores, reduce bedtimes and medication costs, increase productivity, and all the very muggly sorts of metrics that people really do care about. They don't want to be disabled. They don't want to be on meds. They don't want to be having needless expenses. They don't want to be needlessly pathologized. They want to be satisfied customers in the world of healthcare. And they want to have high quality data on how to advance their own consciousness and experience and deal with their inner life and their world. So we're focusing on very straightforward things that will move the MBAs. The MBAs control the system. Most of these kinds of conversations focus on neuroscientists, and they will be a part of it, or something else. We're trying to think about how do you reach the people that actually have control the levers of power in the system, and what do they actually need? What are their understandable epistemic needs in terms of things how do they know that something is useful, and what would motivate them to incorporate it? So we have a bunch of people who have healthcare experience, lobbying experience, economic experience, as well as each of them have had experiences with these themselves, and these kinds of experiences. And so the project begins really with like basic phenomenology. What are we even talking about from a kind of a naturalistic perspective in terms of human experiences and effects? And then for the challenging stuff, which we all know some of this stuff can be challenging sometimes, it can be disruptive to your life when you have these experiences, how do we have diagnostic categories that are better than is crazy needs meds, right? Because at the moment we've got adjustment disorder and schizotypal and psychosis and bipolar and, various things with psychotic features and, and just a few others. There's not a lot. And the indication for all of them is crazy needs meds. We know we can do better than that. There are ways to have these experiences and have them be positive, or at least less confusing, or even if they're sometimes challenging, some of them can eventually be very revelatory, salutary, et cetera. And so, how do you come up with better diagnostic qualities for the World Health Organization's ICD-11 billing codes, or 10, whoever, if they're still using that? How do you improve the DSM-5-TR that comes out of the APA and then influences diagnostic codes and systems around the world, such as the Chinese CCMD-3 or the Latin American equivalents? How can you come up with things that you could inform emergency medicine and psychiatric clinicians when they see people in crisis around this stuff? Hey, here's how to help normalize. Here's ways to support that are non-pathologizing or, that have alternatives to just putting people on Abilify or Lamictal or whatever else, SSRIs or whatever else they end up on. How do you have good information for families who have family members or people's friends who are getting into this territory that is something other than is broken for life and will be on meds forever, that is less stigmatizing? So those are the very practical steps we're trying to accomplish. Those are lofty goals. We realize that the word quixotic really does apply to the nature of how big and challenging our project is. But luckily, we have people from a lot of the world's top universities. We have people from Cambridge and Oxford and Harvard and Yale and Brown and Stanford and Vanderbilt and MIT and Berkeley and lots of other cool universities that just don't have such fancy names, NYU, Columbia, et cetera. And so we actually think we have the horsepower. We've had research that has now been presented at Mass General Psychiatry Grand Rounds. We now have a member who is the sitting president of the psychology division of the APA. We now have members who are, in the World Health Organization and have worked with them. We now have, allies who are lobbyists in Washington. So we are actually doing all of the very real politics steps you need, and there's a lot of places in there. And then on the positive cultivation side, people want to know how to positively cultivate these sorts of experiences, how to go into meditation retreats or psychedelic experiences or sweat lodges or whatever in ways that have prepared them for the possible wide range of anciently documented and contemporarily documented effects that these sorts of traditions and practices can create, ritual circumstances, for example, or if they suddenly start channeling, what do you do with that? How do you relate to that in a skillful way, as probably very relevant example? And or if they start having psi experiences, how do you relate to those in a skillful way that is non-life disruptive and not needlessly pathologizing more easily integrated? What are the practices that lead to things? What are the risks? So we're also going into this in a very neutral way. We're not really necessarily pro or con anything except really high quality data for people to make good choices and lend value to each other's lives and not needlessly harm. So we're very guided by medical ethics, which involves autonomy, which involves informed consent, high quality data on risk benefits and alternatives for any of these things, and then doing good, avoiding harm. And how do you scale it globally? Since those are the four pillars of medical ethics, those are the things we're following in terms of what guide us in our quest to do this big project. And so that hopefully will give you a sense of things. Also, how do you language this? So also very important, how do you language this in a way that the not only the muggly world will understand well, but also like the Abrahamic traditions or people coming from other traditional religious backgrounds from across a wide range. And so how do you have really neutral descriptive language that hopefully can be just part of a technical lexicon of describing this stuff in really neutral, straightforward terms? These are some of our things where we think we need a lot of help. And also then there's the question of the money. So obviously, if there are philanthropists out there that are interested in these topics, none of this is cheap. To do big global systems change and really integrate these things into the textbooks and to do all the work you need to do with professional societies, that's a big ask. And so obviously our financial goals are somewhat lofty, but, you know, about half of what it takes to get a drug through the FDA these days.
I can hear the applause rippling across the realms. It's
thank you.
Yeah, really. I mean, I understand what you're saying. You know, if you can, also the business aspect, you know, you're targeting that because these hospitals are all, especially in America, which is a big shit show, as we know. I mean, it's
yep.
You know, if they can sell it, maybe if it can be, if people will pay for it,
yep,
they'll do it. You know, if it can be, if you can convince the people and if the insurance will pay for it.
Mm-hmm. So we're similar with your national health service. Like, you know, what helps keep people off the dole, helps keep them off expensive meds, helps keep them happy and healthy and not causing needless trouble and complexity, and instead is enhancing people's lives. These are real questions. And a lot of people think meditation and or psychedelics are going to be a major part of that, as well as other practices designed to elicit these sorts of experiences. And, you know, energy work, you know, can get people into this territory. You can have somebody, you know, just like I know people who they just went and got a massage and suddenly it opened up all these systems and chakras, or, you know, whatever you want to call them. That word is probably not going to fly in our, but, you know, energy like centers or whatever. Sure.
Energy centers.
Something like that.
Well,
and unfortunately, you're battling the pharmaceutical companies who, you know, have these big agendas. So,
and very big budgets and very, very powerful lobbying arms. The pharmaceutical industry is an extremely interesting one. And the pharmaceutical, that gets raised almost every time we talk about this. It's one of the first thing people raise, and understandably so. They will appreciate increased diagnostic categories because every additional diagnostic category is something they can fit a med to. So they will be not probably particularly resistant in terms of diagnostic categories or descriptive things. That will probably be fine. Where it then comes into is what is then prescribed or recommended that you do in the face of that. So, for example, you know, if we're talking about the better languaged, more scalable terminology of like Kundalini syndrome, they're going to come up with Kundalini X is the example I use all the time. And they'll say, having problems with your Kundalini? Kundalini X is for you.
Right? Is there a pill for that? I think I might need that one.
Exactly. And so that is going to happen. That is pretty much a guarantee. There's no way to stop that. That will be in a part of the marketplace and the debate and the conversation. But the funny thing is about that will also lend a sort of a legitimacy if there is by a weird sort of effect, right? So you have to look at the pros and cons of each of these things. And it might be that they're willing to, you know, try to look like the good people. And sometimes they are. I should also give my extreme gratitude to the pharmaceutical industry for the number of lives I've saved with their wonderful products. They make amazing things sometimes. How many kids and adults' lives did I save through great antibiotics and some of the cardiac drugs and, you know, got to help a lot of people with a lot of neat medicines. So to be fair about the pharmaceutical industry, they are obviously can be an incredibly positive force for real change, right? That said, they can also have some perverse incentives that are around the need for corporate profits, and they can be pretty greedy and territorial. That's right. And I got to see that too as a doctor, and both are true. And so they're another big player in the space. You just work with them in a real politic way and understand what their needs are and how they might be willing to play in this and what their they care a lot about their image. They care a lot about public relations. They care about helping people. They do. And they care about making a lot of money. And so you can work with each of those and try to figure out how to play to those in ways that then still advance our own particular causes and mitigate the challenges as best we can, realizing we will never have anything like the money they do.
Yeah, sure. I used to work in the prison service.
Oh, you've seen it.
And we had a, I worked with drug and alcohol and the links to crime. So trying to break that that linkage. And what I found worked well and was so surprising is that just to sit down and tell people how to breathe, which, yeah, just to let people breathe and maybe do gentle affirmations or just be kind and sit for a while and let people express themselves, saw incredible differences. Now that doesn't mean they didn't reset and didn't go back onto drug and come back in. No, that would just be too much. It was like a revolving door. But when we got the charities in that would teach them yoga, so moving in their cells to move their bodies, to understand what was happening, there was that change in some, and particularly in those that had been on substances that had to go cold turkey or go on to mind-numbing drugs, which would just keep them quiet. And so I know from personal experience that just the simple things in the prison, and recognized by HM Prison Services, and that in itself is like, you know, we could see the benefits of that within that small slice of the community. And so, yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful because people don't really... Well, unless you've worked in such an institution such as Her Majesty's, as it was, prison service, it's such a slow, methodical, can't change the rules type of ironclad, you know. But even within then, that water ingress was there and is possible. And it's almost like we get it into the mind belt, which is why we've got, you know, you're here, you're talking, it's going into the mind belt. We share it, it's going into the mind belt. All those wonderful people you've got, they can share, just share. The confidence builds. Suddenly the masks can come off.
Nice.
And Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, my mom, who's been wandering on various spiritual paths for a very long time, was friends with a guy named Bo Lozoff. And Bo Lozoff and his wife helped with something called the Prison Ashram Project. And they wrote a book a long time ago called We're All Doing Time. And it was talking about human suffering both in and out of prisons, but also giving a lot of basic techniques, basic yoga, basic breath work, basic visualizations, and simple things like this. This was in the 70s and 80s in the Chapel Hill, North Carolina area where I grew up. And so I actually, early on got exposed to these sorts of notions through my mom and her very interesting friends. And it's clearly true that these can be very helpful. I've had intermittently a correspondence with a prisoner who's on death row who got very interested in meditation. And, every number of months or maybe once a year, I hear from them through someone who I guess has visited them and then transcribes questions and brings my responses back to them. And so that's been really interesting to hear and heart-wrenching to hear of their own journey of dealing with the threat of death and the complexities of the prison system. And working in an ER, we got to take care of a lot of prisoners. So there's this kind of revolving ERs and prisons have a very intimate relationship. And so, yeah, very familiar with all of those things. And the potential is real, not only for real healing and transformation, but also for people to get into territory they weren't expecting. So, you know, these techniques, as we know, yoga and breath work and stuff, can lead to some very unusual experiences, which again can be very salutary, educational, healing, valuable, as you all know, but also lead to stuff that they may not have been expecting. And then the question is, can we help upgrade the people who might be caring for them such that if they run into this territory, they can relate to it more skillfully if they actually start getting into the deeper ends of meditative practice? I've known a few people who ended up in prison and they were serious practitioners and they just took the whole thing as an extremely intense paid for retreat and had a lot of wild adventures in consciousness. So yeah, that's also a thing, but helping even the prison system to understand what might happen. Because I know people who, even on strangely small doses of meditation or body work or breath work or even physical practices like yoga or Tai Chi, got into some very wild openings and territory. And then it's good to have people around and someone in the system who they can recognize, oh yeah, they're getting into this weird stuff. At least there's someone there who can handle this, and have someone you could call in who's got decent training, who's a part of the system, who can help them relate to that in a way that might be very transformative and beneficial, as these old books have been noticing for thousands of years.
Yeah. We get a lot of psychics and medical intuitives come on the show. Would you envisage like a certification to say you've reached a certain level of healing? Or
we actually envision for the clinical mainstream fellowship programs and fellowship training, so you could do additional training, like let's say you became a psychologist or a psychiatrist or an ER doctor, we envision actually like an additional year or two that you could then tack on that would basically be in many ways like transpersonal psychology, but with language that scales better, because a lot of the language, unfortunately, of transpersonal psychology kind of assumes you're preaching to the converted, which is cool. I like the language they use, but it doesn't scale into more conservative settings, right? And would involve similar techniques and perspectives, just without some of the ontological overlay. One of the things we've noticed of projects that failed to penetrate the clinical mainstream is they basically came in with an ontological agenda about the underlying structure or nature of reality. That is pretty much a guaranteed way to get shut out.
Don't do that then. Okay.
Yeah, well, do that if you like it. There are plenty of ontologies I think are fascinating and interesting and very valuable, but not if you want to scale globally into conservative mainstream institutions, right? That's pretty much a guaranteed way to fail. And so, but there are ways to add the value and the tech that benefits people without adding the ontological overlay, keeping it ontologically agnostic or neutral, as many good clinicians will do. So as a clinician, if you want to establish a therapeutic relationship with people coming from multicultural traditions and global traditions, you have, you know, from a wide range of religions or agnosticism or atheism, various secular, you know, materialist variants, you need to focus on respecting their beliefs and figuring out what adds value to their lives to help them do well. And so good clinicians do this already, hopefully, and good mental health people, because we get people from all kinds of backgrounds and belief systems. But just sort of formalizing that in a linguistic way where we can talk in language that attempts to do a lot of the things that transpersonal psychology and psychiatry very understandably tried to do, but hopefully in ways that scale better than what they were able to do.
Yeah, that runs alongside my finding the Aetherius Society. I left school when I was 16, so I'm not a highly educated woman by any stretch, but the teachings are written and said in such a way that even I could understand them, whereas I'd looked at some of the more esoteric teachings before, secret doctrine, for example. And I just read the first page about 17 times and thought, oh, you know, this is not for the likes of me. They just don't understand. Just
right, or Blavatsky, for example, a lot of the theosophical stuff was intentionally overcomplicated and elaborate, right?
Yeah,
pretty high barrier to entry.
Yeah, but as I say, the Aetherius teachings are in a very plain, straightforward. You know, don't use five letters if there's a four-letter word that will do it. It really is that way. So profound and so for everybody. For everybody. And what again, what I'm hearing is we have to have language is inadequate, isn't it? I mean, we're communicating far more deeply than these silly words that are coming out of my mouth. But we do need that basis of this platform to work along. So yeah, of course, I'm just overwhelmed by the amount of work you've taken on, Daniel.
Well, luckily there's a lot of us, and there will be more of us. So we add members every week, which is how we're now in the 230s. So
yeah,
which is great. And so there are a lot of people who understand the vision; it makes sense to them. And it seems like an obviously straightforward thing to do. And it's kind of surprising nobody's ever actually tried it in quite the way we're trying it, with a very practical, pragmatic, functional approach. That just
it's
is
the
like
Aquarian one... age, isn't it? Maybe that's yeah. It's an Aquarian. Am I right? Is it Aquarian?
Sure. And Aquarian. I it's interesting. My mom, who really in some ways started me opening my mind to all this stuff, is a triple Aquarian just for fun. So she's got all her things in Aquarius, and I'm a double Aquarian, curiously enough. So hopefully
it's your time. Yeah,
so what have you got, your moon, and what have you got, your moon's in your sun sign, or are you rising?
So my moon is in Virgo, and then the sun and ascendant are in Aquarius, and my mom's got all three in Aquarius.
Wow. Now I'm an Aquarian, but that's only my sun sign, so yeah.
3, 2, 1. We was speaking of people that have tried and not failed before, but I was thinking of have you heard of the College of Psychic Studies in London with was it Arthur Conan Doyle and and Sir Oliver Lodge there, and actually Dr. King was in touch with him. So Sir Oliver Lodge has passed on to the other realms, but he's very active there, and he does a lot of work, you know, healing and so when you pass over, you still keep doing this work. And it was wonderful to hear the stories of him helping.
Nice. And funnily, just today, I was talking with a guy named Peter Mary, who has a place called Weird Experience up in the north. And they got all the gear and publications and everything from the Princeton Anomalous Research Lab, right, which is one of the world's great institutions. And interestingly enough, he didn't know John Kruth at Ryan Research or Ed Kelly at DOPS or Charles Tart. So I actually just got to connect all of them by email today. That was really fun helping to put together, because it's funny how siloed everybody can be in such a strangely small field, and that these people who are like so close wouldn't actually know each other or have ever connected. I mean, how many serious Psy research places are there in the world? Less than 10, I think. And so... yeah, it's amazing they wouldn't all know each other and hang out, but didn't. Amazing.
That is amazing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there's all these people in the other realms are all working to help us as well, and, you know, you're not alone. I mean, you know, it's inevitable, though, that we will return. I mean, one day the masters will walk among us again and in the universities, and, yeah, it just seems like we're in the dark now, but...
Well, we are.
Yeah,
we are.
Well, but we're walking towards
but
the light.
We know the light coming.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's an opportunity to serve. You know, I mean, it. Yeah, let's be positive, Deborah.
And in terms of also service and helping people with these things, which I'm guessing there are people in your organization who could be very useful to speak with. We're about, hopefully this spring, going to launch something called the Expert Opinion Project. And the Expert Opinion Project, most of medicine and mainstream psychology and psychiatry are based on consensus expert opinion. And most of it is not actually based on randomized prospective clinical trials or whatever we think it will. Some of the med stuff is, but the most of what we do is not. Most of the diagnostic categories are not. They've never been compared to other systems. Or it was people sitting around a committee that had seen some patients or some cases, and then they came up and they wrote some stuff down, and that just became what was in the textbooks. And so one of our expert opinion project is going to be to interview 150 of the people who have been helping people deal with these kinds of phenomena and openings and awakenings or energy stuff or whatever you want to call it four decades, this is going to be the Emma Bragdons and Joseph Goldsteins and Jack Kornfields and backroom jungle, backroom psychedelic facilitators in Amsterdam and jungle shamans and people who have been helping people with channeling and all of these sorts of things. And ask them, like, what would you tell the clinical mainstream if you could write chapters in the textbooks? What are the additional diagnostic things you would add if you could just edit ICD-11? What are the non-medication based strategies you would add for normalizing, helping, supporting, cultivating, helping to ground, integrate, et cetera, these kinds of experiences? If you suddenly had editorial control of the whole system, what would you do? And wow. So there may be people in your organization who themselves have been helping people relate to the deep end of human experience and help them deal with that and integrate that and cultivate the good and deal with the strange and the weird and the challenging. And so if you have those kinds of people, we would be delighted to interview them as part of our expert opinion project, because we want to find, the grandmothers and grandfathers of the movement who have individually decades of, experience, and collectively literally thousands of years experience and hundreds of thousands of people they would have helped, which we think is going to be the highest evidence quality we can bring to bear and recommend to the clinical mainstream at the moment. So if you have those sorts of people, let us know.
Yeah, we do.
We would be happy to include them on our lists and think about how, everybody is going to be coming from their own tradition and their own frameworks. But within that, there will be gems that we think we can scale globally if it's slightly differently languaged or maybe slightly different underlying conceptual frames or something, but it still would be very valuable to people. And so that's a project we've got coming online relatively soon. We think we've just found the money for it. And so, or at least for the first part of it, for the pilot. Yeah, we think we've got money for the pilot, and we may have found money for some of the rest of it. So we'll see. I spend a lot of my time doing philanthropic fundraising. So if anybody out there cares about these topics, we have fantastic teams going to help work on this. Let us know.
Yeah. Excellent. I knew there would be something where we could start and build. I just knew it.
Yeah.
To be.
And then compendium of phenomena. So we're compiling a gigantic compendium of phenomena, just like from a naturalist point of view. Remember the old naturalists in the 1700s and 1800s wandered out into the jungles and forests and oceans, and they just cataloged. What is all this stuff? What are all these bugs and plants and mammals and birds and rocks and dirt? And they just were like, what is this? Because to really get a scientific study of it, you'd first need to start with like the phone book of what are we even talking about? And once you have that, you can understand the interrelationship between these things, the sequences of these things, the dynamics of these sorts of things. And so also if you have sort of phenomenological texts that talk about like the experiences that people have, just very straightforwardly, we also are basically scraping every single one of those we can find for what is described, what do people report, and then how do we enfold this into something that would inform the clinical mainstream. And the reason for this is manyfold, aside from the fact that it's a sensible approach for studying a new field like biology or the interesting effects of the mind, but also because the DSM-5-TR has these little, what we call spiritual exemption criteria, where they basically said, if you're having these experiences in a specific tradition that expects these experiences and you're otherwise functional, maybe they're not mental illness. Very cool of them. Right. And that was gotten in by the good doctors Lukoff, Liu, and Turner in 1993-94, and influenced basically textbooks around the world. What weirdly enough did not then happen is the phone book of all the expected stuff, right? Because the problem is clinicians don't know. If you haven't had these experiences or haven't been trained, you don't know what is the large range of these experiences. And you could go, okay, well, actually they're having this. That actually is expected and anticipated. And so you're relying on people who may not have been well-trained in traditions or maybe running into these things sort of spontaneously, or even like, would a Catholic, a regular practicing Catholic know of all the expected things you would expect in Catholic mysticism that they might run into? No. Or would a psychiatrist? No, except the rarest of them who happen to be Catholic mystics or well studied in these things. So actually to be able to give them basically the phone book and say, hey, these are actually the expected things that you could use the spiritual exemption criteria on. And maybe you don't have to pathologize these people, but we have other time-tested strategies that people have developed to help them relate more skillfully to these sorts of experiences. And so also, if you want to help with the phone book, please, because we're very excited about that.
I already thought you were ambitious enough, but you've just gone up another level. Gosh. So I'm looking on your website now, and is that you're going to make a portal where people can upload, fill in descriptions of these events, or how are you?
We actually have something like that for psychedelics that was already pre-built by something called Effect Index. So it's built for psychedelics, and it's a wide range of effects that psychedelics are known to cause. So if you go to Effect Index, and then we've actually spent a bunch of money to upgrade this because there's such a wide range of effects, and this is really important for doing open science and open research and having be able to crowdsource people's trip reports. And then the idea is to take that same technology and basically build it out for the rest of psi, energy, openings, awakenings, challenges, dark nights, whatever you want to call it, wow, peak experiences, and all of that, such that we can crowdsource these with really precise terminology and really precise language and do much better science on that and help citizen scientists help contribute to us. So that's, if you could look at effectindex.com and find that. And that's the remarkable Josie Kins and her team. Very thankful for them. And we've given some grants to support them, and we're about to give some more to make the security on it better, we think. And then, we also, there are big public websites where people actually talk about these sorts of experiences, like, you know, a lot of the stream entry subreddits and Dharma Overgrounds. And you can't scrape Arrowhead anymore. They don't let you do that. But there are other sites where people now have talked about various psychedelic and you know, mystical openings. You can find these sites. And it turns out now with current AI and machine learning techniques, we have a number of people who are AI ML people, and they actually, you can just scrape all of that and then crunch it through the AI ML, and it'll tell you all the categories and the various variants, and it'll organize what's super noisy data for you in really cool ways. So that's actually, we're using new technology that was never available to people before to be able to crowdsource massive amounts of online data to skillfully and ethically and anonymously then figure out, hey, what are people experiencing out there and how are they relating to it? What helps? What doesn't? That's something we call the big data project, and it's part of our special projects. And we've already done some of the pilot research for that, and we're actively fundraising for the rest of it.
I mean, I know people have researched psychedelics before and OBEs, you know, spent a lot of time categorizing those and NDEs. And mm-hmm. But this seems like you've got big ambitions.
Yes, that's true. But we have talented people.
Yeah.
And we think a real ethical mandate. We think medical ethics demands that we do these things. We need to know what's going on out there and have clinicians and mental health practitioners and people out in the field supporting people with this in the religious traditions, you know, in the ceremonial traditions, have good data of like what's out there, what do you see? Because a lot of people facilitating various kinds of ceremonies or ritualistic transformations may not have run into anything like the full range of what's possible out there. I'm sure I haven't, even though I've been in this sort of world for half of my life, really more depending on how you look at it. And so, you know, being able to have resources out there for, that is actually a thing. Here's what people have found helps with it, and they should be able to look it up. So there's something in pediatrics called NORD, and it's the National Organization of Rare Diseases. And they published this massive book of all these, you know, unfortunate genetic anomalies and strange metabolic things that, like, you know, maybe 10 people in the world have ever had or something, or 100. These unusually rare diseases, but you can look them up, and if they tell you, hey, I've got this thing, and then there's all the stuff you do, the meds to avoid, the things to give, like the trouble they can run into, how you manage it, and it's just marvelous, right? So you don't have to keep in your head all these incredibly obscure, you know, weird genetic syndromes and other syndromes, and instead, like, here's the book, and you can look it up and then help them and lend value, and we hope to create the same sort of thing, basically, for the deep end of human experience.
You've exhausted me.
I'm sorry.
I'm pretty done too. Yeah, I'll lie down now.
Yeah.
Wow. Get you.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, no?
Yeah, I can keep going.
Yeah. No, we've got to stop now. I can't take anymore.
Right.
I'm gonna kill Deborah. Or that'll be one of your phenomenons I have to write on the website.
Oh no.
Information overload. No, more power to you, but so people can go on your website, which is
theeperc.org, is the big research group. And you can go to our white paper and you can read all about our ambitious plans. And then ebenefactors.org is the 501c3 registered charity where we aggregate funds to give grants and help promote all this in media and logistics and scientific support and all of that. So ebenefactors.org and theeperc.org. Thank you.
Effect Index as well. We'll put
Effect
that link
Index.
To that.
Absolutely. Go to effectindex.com and yep. Amazing. Well, amazing sites.
Thanks, Daniel. I mean, this has been impressive.
Well, thank you. And if people out there are interested in helping, reach out to us at info@theeperc.org. That's info@theeperc.org.
All right.
And if people are interested, in the show notes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And if people want to learn more about the Aetherius Society, then go to aetherius.org.
Wonderful. That is great news. And I look forward to, again, if you've got people who've been helping people with these sorts of things, we'd be delighted to chat with you and figure out the natural synergies as we work to make everybody be able to relate more skillfully to all these kinds of experiences.
All right, Daniel. Bless you.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.